Good afternoon, everybody. Welcome inside ESPN Studios. I am your host, Spencer Wilson, and back from his two-week hiatus on the board is Mr. Sean Cloud.
Guess who's back?
Yeah, well, they don't have to guess. I just told them.
I know. I wanted to be clever, but I just couldn't bring it out of myself. A little bit nervous again. It's been a while.
Welcome back, man. How'd the road treat you?
It was good. It was a lot of fun. Not much really to say. I'm exhausted.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of work. Not like being back here in the studio where there's air conditioning and I'm not getting sunburn or anything, not putting on layers and layers of sunscreen.
Yes.
But it was a blast. It was a good time. It was a good little work trip, you know. So other than that, how was it in studio while I was gone?
It didn't burn down,
so that's a good sign.
Yeah, you know, it's still standing. No physical damage caused. There's always some mental wear and emotional wear. But other than that, all good stuff, man. And as nice as it is to have you back, we are not going to have Eric Musselman back next year. That's kind of been the big news of the past week. The fact that a lot of back and forth going on between the fans and the people wondering, will he leave? Will he not leave? Then, of course, we got that very nice wool put over our eyes when his wife sent a message out saying they were definitely not going to leave and they were going to stay here. And then I think it was literally the next day,
he was announced he was leaving to go
to Fayetteville, Arkansas.
That video came out from the Razorbacks saying that he was going. I just kind of sat there and was like, way to lie to us, you know? Get our hopes up that you're staying and then not.
So Musselman is gone, but honestly, the question always comes up when a coach leaves, can you blame him? I think it's the same conversation when you have a player that decides to go somewhere else. Whenever someone decides to make a change for if they feel the betterment of their career, you have to just kind of be okay with that because it's not our life. It's not our career. It's Eric Musselman's career that he now wants to take to Arkansas, and that's his right to do that. It's a little tough just because of the last couple of years that he's had here in Reno and how nice it's been to have a basketball team that's competing nationally in the rankings and that's getting national attention, not just in the top 10, but they're on SportsCenter. They're getting interviewed by Scott Van Pelt. They're making the top 10. I mean, it's going to be a big cultural change, but I don't think you can blame him for wanting to do this.
I mean, that's a very optimistic way of looking at it because a lot more people are going to bring in that emotion that everyone else is bringing, you know, the emotion that I'm bringing into it. They're like, all right, look, you're leaving our town, man. That's not cool, but at the same time, I do understand you're going to further yourself. Maybe your dream is one day to be higher up or as an NBA coach or whatever it is. But it still hurts. It burns on the inside. You made this team basically what it is.
Yeah.
And now we're kind of seeing the runoff of it. Yeah, we have a new coach, which is great.
Yeah.
At least we have a coach.
Yep.
But the downside is seeing these players who are going into that transfer pool and portal and all that stuff.
And I think the thing that kind of caught me off guard with the possible move from Musselman was that it's different between basketball and football. In college football, Power 5 is king. When you have the four-team playoff, if you're not in a Power 5 school, chances are you're not going to get in unless you go undefeated and beat Power 5 schools in every single out-of-conference game you have. In basketball, it's totally different. 68 teams get a chance to win a national championship. So you don't necessarily have to go to a Power 5 conference school to have success. It's really about recruiting. Can you recruit? And that's what Musselman did. He brought in 4-star recruits. He brought in McDonald's All-Americans. And Steve Alford, the new guy, the former UCLA head coach, can also do that. But I think what caught me off guard, I talked a little bit to the voice of the Wolfpack, John Ramey, as well last weekend. We were playing, when he was broadcasting one of the baseball games, we had a conversation during a commercial break, and he pointed out that, yes, it is SEC country. It is going to be a lot more weekly national attention, and it's not just going to be like a one-year thing like this past year was where you have to be pretty much top 10 to get people to notice you. They're going to notice you if you're in last place in the SEC because that's just the nature of the conference. So I get that, but I don't think it's a decision that has to be made. I'm not just talking about just Musselman's standpoint either. I'm talking about any coach. It's not a decision I think has to be made because of where the school is, because you can have success anywhere in college basketball. Look at Gonzaga. Gonzaga is not a Power 5 conference school, but they are constantly a 1 or a 2 seed when it comes to March Madness. So I guess seeing the tweet or the message from his wife and having that thought process in my head of you don't need to go to a Power 5 school to really be successful, I was caught even more off guard when he left for Arkansas. But, and then you mentioned it, what will kind of the extent of this fallout be? Jazz Johnson's already put his name in the transfer portal. Jordan Brown's put his name in the transfer portal. Another player, I thought I had his name written down, but I don't, but I saw in a report that three players have put their names there. So what will the extent of that fallout be? Because right now, Steve Alford's official. He got introduced this morning. His name's on the contract, so we can start talking to players.
I think he's doing a press conference right now, actually, too.
Was it now? I thought it was this morning. I thought he got introduced it.
No, he got introduced as he was the head coach, but he's going on in a press conference. It started at 2.
So, talking now, and obviously, if he wants to, he can pursue those guys, but I imagine he would. Mm-hmm. At least Jordan Brown. Jazz Johnson, going into maybe his last year in college, you can go after him, I think, if you want, but I think as a senior, his mind's kind of already made up. But Jordan Brown, this is a young guy going into his sophomore year. It might be worth going after him and really sitting down with him if you're Alford and talking to him kind of how you want to approach things and how you want to. Obviously, I'm not going to tell Steve Alford how to do his job.
Just suggestions.
He's got a lot more coaching experience than I do. But it'll be interesting to see what the extent of that fallout is. Because then you were talking to me and you were saying before we went on air that you got guys like Lindsey Drew who are just so eager to play. They don't care who their coach is as long as it's someone he can trust. And I feel you can trust Steve Alford.
Right. I believe I also read a report stating something along the lines that 7 seniors or 6 seniors don't plan on leaving in general. So at least we have a good, stable senior core there that's been playing together for a while anyway. So that's always a good sign. But yeah, the fallout, we're not really sure. You're right. He could go and he could talk to, and hopefully he goes and talks to him because I don't see why you wouldn't.
Yeah.
And then if they ultimately, as players and individuals, feel, oh, you know, I don't want to or I do want to, this seems like a good fit, whatever that may be. But we'll know more down the line, of course, of what his intentions are for this team for next year.
Absolutely. And I think something else, and I hope that this doesn't happen, but something else that usually comes up when a coach leaves is if there was something more under the surface, something a little more behind the scenes that led to it, eventually that usually comes out. I'm crossing my fingers that's not the case, and Musk just saw a better opportunity in his view in Arkansas. But you gotta wonder if maybe the struggles in the postseason help lead to that. If they don't get knocked out in the conference semis by San Diego State, if they get past Florida in the first round of the tournament, is the thinking different? I don't know if it really would be, just based on the program that he's good. Because it's not like Arkansas had a thrilling year. They didn't make the March Madness tournament. Mm-hmm. I'm not even sure if they made the NIT. If they did, they didn't make it very far. So it's not like he's leaving for a job at Kentucky or a job at Duke or anything like that. So hopefully there's nothing behind the scenes and just is a better opportunity for him. And what also could go into deciding whether or not a player stays or goes is the reliability of the coach. And Alford did get a 10-year deal from Nevada, regardless of what that means and how it gets restructured down the road. To come right out of the gate with a 10-year deal could show Jordan Brown or other players that he goes after to try and keep here, or players coming in that, hey, I can be here a while, so why not come here and play here? And just continue to build on this kind of legacy that you have.
I agree completely. I still am a little bit hurt. I'm going to be hurt probably until the start of next year about Musselman leaving. But if the new coach can show his worth and show that he can take a team that's still going to be rated pretty high and go, we should be good. It's going to take time because it is. You had a lot of our seniors are leaving. You have a new coach coming in to take over, you know, the new seniors and this new team in a sense. So it may be even a completely different play style and everything that decides to happen, which honestly is actually kind of a cool aspect of it. I'm kind of thrilled about that.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see where it goes. It'll be interesting to see how, I mean, the approach is going to be different. Just the energy level of the two guys already is just a different vibe and a different approach. But it's just going to be interesting just to see how it is taken. I mean, right now, just prepare yourself for a rough year next year. There's going to have to be at least one rebuilding year, and it's going to come next year. So just prepare yourself for that. Get yourself mentally ready that the images of the last two seasons probably aren't going to be too relevant when it comes to next season. But I go back to that 10-year deal. If that is kind of the window they're looking at with Steve Alford, if it's one rough year and he can rebuild and get into the year 2 and get this team back into kind of a national contention, that could be a very lucrative near decade or so, if he stays that long, of March Madness runs, of conference tournament runs. So it's definitely the possibility of a lot of success. I think not a whole lot of people better than Steve Alford to fill the shoes of Eric Musselman now that he's gone. So that's been the big news around Nevada sports. And, of course, time will tell how that goes and how it all ends up. But not the only sports going on right now in Reno. The Aces just finished up their first home series of the season against Albuquerque. They won 2-1. Solid performance there. Struggled a little bit in their opening series against Fresno. Went 1-3 in the series. Outscored 31-24, although little misleading because two of those games were really kind of lopsided, but two of them were also one-run losses. One went to extra innings, which was the very first game of the year, went to 10 innings, which also came after a freak outage of lights in right field that just went down.
You notice how it's always right field that goes down first? It's never like, left field. It's always right field.
That was a really weird moment on the broadcast, too, because, you know, I was in there running the board, and Ryan Radke's just doing a great job, as always. And all of a sudden, you go, oh, and the lights just went out in right field. And you kind of look around. What do you mean they just went out? That doesn't make any sense. But it was about a 25 or so minute delay, because basically all you can do is turn them off, let them cool down, and turn them back on, let them reheat back up and light up again. So it was about a 20 to 25 minute delay. So how much that throws a wrench into everybody's system. Just kind of threw an extra curveball, pun intended there, into the first game. But again, fairly close, fairly competitive series. Then, of course, they bounced back nicely, beating Albuquerque in the first and third game of the series. In that first game, Taylor Clark struck out 9 batters and just gave up 2 runs. And then, of course, the 13-2 result in Game 2, a little lopsided. But then a nice comeback win last night in Game 3. They won 7-6, all thanks to a Kevin Krohn 3-run homer in the bottom of the 7th to put him up 7-5. And the Isotopes scored a run in the 9th. Before Jimmy Scherfy closed the door.
Oh.
His 49th career save for the Aces. That is the franchise record currently. But good series. Good first opening series. Little cold out there. I was out there for Thirsty Thursday last night. Thank you to everybody who just came out and supported the Aces, but also came by to say hi. Appreciated it. And but it was a little bit of a cold series, especially on opening day. But good to everybody for getting out there and supporting the Aces. That's what April baseball is all about.
Yeah, if there's one thing I've learned from Ace ball being in town is that every home series, opening home series, is freezing.
Yes.
It is freezing. I don't even want to go. I'll just listen to it on the broadcast, honestly. I'll sit at home and we'll listen to it. I will not go.
I was
going
to say, if you can't make it to the game, the next best thing is definitely listening to Ryan Radke call it on the radio.
And if you'd like going to the game, bring a radio with you and then you can listen at the same time.
Or just get the seats right under the broadcast booth and just listen to him as he's calling the game. If you're wondering where that is, you want the seats in the top row right behind home plate.
So like 105, 103.
Yeah, I think you want to be like right in front of that red wall, right behind home plate, and you just listen to Ryan call the game right there. But other action going on at Greater Nevada Field, because the 1868 FC also off to a solid start as they went through the month of March and got at least a point from every league match. They unfortunately suffered their first loss last weekend. They were playing at the Rail Monarchs SLC, and 2 first-half goals really propelled the Rail Monarchs. They had a 2-0 lead there and then added a third goal in the 48th minute, so really quickly into the second half. But Reno was able to add a goal in the 82nd minute off the foot of forward Aiden Apodaca to make it 3-1, which was the final. So that's the first official loss of the 1868 FC season where they got no points out of league play. But still a great start. Something we've talked about the first 2 seasons of this team is that they get out of the gate a little slowly. Those first 5 or 6 games, they maybe get a win or 2, a draw or 2, but you know, they just kind of stumble out of the gate usually. And they've done a really good job of not doing that this year. First month of March, winning and drawing, not a bad way to start the season. Reno stays on the road, however, this week, playing at Colorado Switchbacks FC in Colorado Springs, and that kickoff is at 5 o'clock. And I believe ESPN Plus might be carrying that. I thought I had it written down, but I don't have it.
Are you asking me to look for it?
I don't know. I'm not asking you to look for it. I'm just waving my pen in the air because I was trying to help me figure it out. But kickoff is at 5 o'clock, and if you can't catch it on ESPN Plus, I believe NSN will also be carrying the game as well, so you can tune in locally and catch it there. And then next week, we're hoping to get Anthony Bartley, the head coach and GM of the Reno Express, on the show. Hopefully have an interview with him and maybe a player or two. That's in the works, so hopefully we have that for you next week. When we come back, we will have our buddy from PropSwap, Mr. Ian Epstein, on the phone, talk about all the craziness that happened last weekend and what we can look forward to this weekend, as well as we'll have a update on the Masters leaderboard for you as well. And then we'll have a giveaway for you at the end of the next segment also. So stay tuned for that, because if you don't know what it is, you're going to want to know. And if you do know, I imagine you want it. So stay tuned to the Spencer Wilson Show here on ESPN Radio 94.5 FM. Welcome back inside the studio. Always very happy to be joined by our buddy Ian Epstein from PropSwap, and I got to talk to him this morning over the phone like we always do, and here is how that conversation sounded. Joining me on the phone now, co-founder of PropSwap, Mr. Ian Epstein. And Ian, right off the bat, I got to say congratulations. You said bet on Virginia. Virginia did win the national championship. Give me your thoughts on those last three games of the March Madness tournament.
Yeah, that was a crazy Final Four. Virginia didn't make it easy on themselves, comeback after comeback, but I thought they had the most talent and they were well coached. That was a great championship game, and I think it was made even more interesting by the fact that a lot of people knew that there was a guy out there that had a $1,500 bet on Texas Tech at 200-1 odds. That he had the opportunity to sell on PropSwap, but he chose not to.
And what was the repercussion? So he just kind of ate the loss on that ticket then?
Yeah, so for those who don't know the story, so PropSwap is a marketplace where people can sell their sports bets. And so last week, there was a guy who came to us. He had a $1,500 bet on Texas Tech to win $300,000. And he came to us before the Final Four game against Michigan State. He wanted $65,000 for the ticket. We got him bids. Dez Bryant bid on the ticket and fit for $50,000. Dez Bryant's, a big Texas Tech fan. We got him bids of $57,500, which he declined. He let it ride through the Michigan State game. And then on Sunday, we got him an offer of $125,000. For the ticket, which he then declined as well. I know for a fact he had some Virginia tickets. He bought some through us. I know he had a couple others, but I know for a fact it did not match $125,000. That's for sure.
Wow, I can't believe Dez Bryant tried to buy. I mean, I guess you never know who's going to be looking to make a bet with anybody. But I got to get your opinion that foul there between Virginia and Auburn. Did you agree with it? Did you think it was a little weak? What were your thoughts on that call?
That was a foul. You might not like it. You might hate that the game got decided by it. But, but the letter of the law, that was a foul. He got hit, in his shooting motion. But that's why we always say you never know what's going to happen. I mean, crazy things happen even at the very end of games, and that's why PropSwap is there, right? You can sell your ticket, at any point during the game. So, crazy things happen, and so you can download the PropSwap app and list your ticket for sale, and we'll find your buyer even during the game.
And now with March Madness in the books, as depressing as that may be, the great thing about sports is you always get something that comes up right after. Now the Masters tournament is underway. We're a day into it. I believe Rory McIlroy was the betting favorite coming into the tournament, but Brooks Koepka and Bryson DeChambeau shared the lead after day one. Who would you say is the betting favorite right now to win the Masters?
Well, yeah, I mean, if you look at the odds this morning, DeChambeau, Koepka are all at the top. John Rahm is a guy who people liked before the tournament, who's at the top of the leaderboard. Ian Poulter. I actually had liked Adam Scott before the tournament at 40-1. He's in the mix, and his odds have gone up a lot. But I'm a big believer that there's always overreactions in the betting market, right? So the guy who's in first is after round one is a big favorite, but he's probably going to drop down a little bit. And then a guy who was favored before the tournament, who had a weak round one, he's going to be a huge underdog. But things tend to even out, over the course of two or three rounds. I'd be looking at a guy like Tommy Fleetwood, who was 20-1 before the tournament. Now he's 250-1. Or a guy like Justin Thomas, who was a predetermined favorite at like 11-1. Now he's 50-1. So there's a lot of volatility in these markets. And what you have to do is find a long shot, and if you do well, you can then flip it for a profit on PropSwap. At the same time, you can go on PropSwap and buy tickets as well. We suggest everyone download the app available for iPhone and for Android. Turn on the notifications so that every time a golf ticket gets listed, you get notified about it. And then it's literally a race to see who can buy it first, because oftentimes people will list their tickets for sale at odds that are better than the sports book.
And the NHL playoffs also underway now. They have their first 2 days are in the books. Everyone's played their game ones. If you are looking at these first round matchups, if you were to say this is the underdog that I think could pull off an upset, that could kind of ruffle some feathers, who would that underdog be in your view to keep an eye on?
Yeah, I think the hottest team in the league right now are the St. Louis Blues. That's kind of got another almost Golden Knights-esque story to them, in the sense that they were one of the worst teams in January. People got tickets on them at 100-1, 150-1 to win the Stanley Cup, and now their odds are down to 15-1, and the one game one on the road against Winnipeg. So that's the hottest team that I don't think anyone wants to play right now. We're seeing tons of movement on them on PropSwap. For example, we saw a guy, he made a $200 bet on the Blues in February, and then he just flipped it on PropSwap for $500. We've seen tons of these tickets on the Blues sell. So that's the team that I'm looking at.
And then the NBA playoffs get started tomorrow, and the Western Conference still pretty decided between the Warriors and the Rockets. The Nuggets are in there as well, but it's been a little more wide open than we've seen the last couple years. Would you say that the Nuggets are a legit threat to upstaging the Warriors and the Rockets, or would you say that we're pretty much destined to get the Warriors and Rockets again in the conference finals?
Yeah, I mean, if the NBA playoffs was a one game single elimination like March Madness, or even a best of three, I would say a team like the Rockets has a chance to win two out of three games against the Warriors. But it's a best of seven, and it's very, very difficult to beat the Warriors four out of seven games. So as much as I would like to say, we'll see some upsets in the Western Conference, I think it's pretty much a given that we will see Warriors-Rockets, which, listen, I'm not mad about. That was a great seven-game series last year. Rockets, should have won for all intents and purposes. But my attention is going to be on the Eastern Conference. That is wide open. That's the first time LeBron hasn't been in the Eastern Conference. You've got the Bucks, the 76ers, the Raptors, and the Celtics as the top four teams, all of which are immensely talented, all of which have never gone to the championship, in recent memory. And so I'm going to be looking at the Eastern Conference. You got the Bucks with the best player in the league, but super inexperienced. You've got the Celtics with the most talent, but they can't get their head straight. You've got the Raptors, who can never seem to get over the hump. Every year they've got a great record, but can't get over the hump. Kawhi and a new coach. And then you've got the 76ers, who've got tons of superstar talent in Ben Simmons and Joel Embiid and Jimmy Butler. But, can they pull together? So the Eastern Conference, I think, is fascinating.
And if Giannis can stay healthy, we know he's had some issues later in the season with some injuries. If he can stay healthy, do you think Milwaukee is that slight favorite to take the Eastern crown?
They should be favored if he's healthy, but you love having the best guy on the court on your team. But my pick for the Eastern Conference, I somehow call me hard headed, but I somehow think the Celtics are going to pull it out. I know that they've had an extremely rocky regular season. They've had internal turmoil, but I just think they've got the most talent. They've got the best coach, and although they're the fourth seed in the East, I think somehow that they're going to be able to pull it off and make it to the championship.
And then we've just talked about all the stuff going on this weekend in the world of sports. So if you had to pick an area or a certain game or a matchup to kind of look at that might be a little more profitable than other matchups, what would kind of be the one place you're looking at or would advise to look at?
I mean, for this weekend, I'm looking at the Masters. It happens once a year. Everyone loves it. I'm a sucker for Augusta. So I think it's just fun. If you can go to PropSwap, we've got tons of Masters tickets up for sale, ranging from $5 to in the hundreds of dollars. So whatever your price range is, I think it's just fun to throw a couple bucks down and have a little action on the Masters this weekend.
Well, Ian, I appreciate your time. I can't wait to see everything that unfolds over the weekend, and I can't wait to hear of the craziness that you experience over this weekend next Friday when we get to talk to you again.
All right. Thanks, Spencer. Talk to you.
Always fun to talk to Ian. Always fun to hear about the madness that goes on down there in Vegas. And let's talk a little bit about that Final Four because, man, they were all fun games. They were all really fun games. Let's start with Virginia and Auburn because that may have been one of the craziest endings of the tournament. Virginia was down 6, and Kyle Guy hit a corner 3 to make it a 3-point game. And then the foul that will forever be alive in Auburn infamy. But the explanation of the foul made sense. So if you were watching the game, corner 3 from Virginia, the way it was described by Gene Steratore, who is the rules guru there for CBS, basically it was what they call an A to B foul is what it was. The defender left the ground at point A and landed at point B. And when he landed at point B, he made contact with the shooter still in a shooting motion before he came down to the ground versus going straight up to defend and straight down. So instead of going up and down, it was A to B. That was the explanation of the foul, which makes sense. By that definition, it was a foul. So you have that, then you have Kyle Guy step up and drain all 3 free throws, had ice running through his. He said he was scared, which I can understand that. He said he was nervous during the post-game interview. But for a man to step up and knock down 3 free throws to, at that point, give your team the lead is ridiculous. It's an unfortunate way to see a game end. You never want to see it end because of a controversial call that leads to free throws, of all things. But that's part of it. So hats off to Virginia. I don't know, did you see the video of the Auburn fans who thought they had won? Did you see that? There's a video of
Is that the video of the guys flipping the car?
Maybe I just didn't watch it long enough. But I saw a video of college students running out of some kind of center where they're all watching the game. They were running out, cheering that they had won. And then somebody else, like 2 minutes later, somebody else comes out and starts passing the message around. Like, hey, game wasn't over. Virginia just beat us. And you can just hear the screams and the cheers just slowly die down around campus as reality set in for Auburn fans. But then, of course, Texas Tech and Michigan State having that kind of knockdown, drag-out battle was a lot of fun to watch. Texas Tech came away with that victory, which was huge for them. It's huge just because they're not really a basketball, but they're not known for their basketball program. The Big 12 really, again, kind of known as a football conference. But, I mean, unless you're Kansas, that's a basketball school. But other than that, it's just fun to see teams that aren't really known for basketball prowess coming up and beating someone like Michigan State. And that set up Virginia versus Texas Tech, 2 teams that has never won a national championship before. And Virginia was able to do it, capping off a huge redemption story, being the first number 1 seed to get knocked out by a 16th seed last tournament and going from 0 to hero this year, winning the national championship. It's a heck of a turnaround. Congratulations to the Cavaliers. And Final Four kind of ruined my bracket. Going into the second weekend, I had a chance to get all 4 Final Four teams correct, and I missed all 4.
Sounds like my playoffs during the NFL.
Yeah, I mean, it's just tough, man. It's tough to gauge these things nowadays. Before we head to break, and before we go to our giveaway here real quick, I'm going to give you a quick Masters leaderboard because they are in a weather delay, so round 2 has been temporarily suspended. And at the time of suspension, we have 3 players tied for the lead at 7-under, Molinari, Day, and Koepka. And only 1 of those 3 men were in the lead yesterday, and that was Brooks Koepka. He has stayed in the lead, but the other man that shared the lead, Bryson DeChambeau, has fallen all the way down, tied for 15th. At 3-under, so he has struggled today staying on that pace. But again, round 2 suspended, so we'll see how they finish that up. And then, of course, round 3 and 4 coming over the weekend. And now, before we go to commercial, Sean, I think we got something for the people.
We got something that I'll be jealous of whoever wins, because I want these, and I just can't
Both
have them.
Both of us want to go.
I know. It would be so much fun.
Oh, yeah, man.
One day we'll go.
One day.
Anyway, you have a chance to win a pair of tickets. Win them before you can buy them tickets to see WWE live at the Reno Event Center on June 10th. Our tickets are not in-house, so our promotions team will call you.
So just know that. Then phone number that whoever out there wins gives us, that's the number they will contact you for the tickets. And that goes to call number 9 right now at 775-333-0945. NHL and NBA playoffs after the break here on the Spencer Wilson Show on ESPN Radio 94.5 FM. We have officially entered the playoff season for the NHL and NBA. The NHL, one game in for all their series, all eight series have played their first game. And I think the biggest shocker coming out of the game ones in the first round was that Tampa Bay lost.
I know.
The President's Trophy winners, the best record in the NHL, the fact they won 62 out of 82 games, that means that they either lost outright or lost in overtime, a total of 20 games. Now, I know hockey and basketball are different, but just take this into account. The Phoenix Suns won 19 games this year. So that means they almost won as many games as Tampa Bay lost. I know it's hockey and basketball, but just think about that for a second.
I like how when you're always comparing something, you bring up the Suns to compare
to. Because they're just so awful. Like, it's... I'm gonna stay a fan because I've been a fan since I was a kid. And if they ever do get to the promised land, I want to rejoice like no one's ever rejoiced before. But it's hard not to point out the level of suck.
I mean,
that the Phoenix Suns are operating at.
It's the first game for the NHL for the Lightning. So I took them in five to win the Lightning to win. So not too bad yet.
No. We'll and see. Honestly, I wouldn't be surprised if they ran off four straight wins.
That's what I'm thinking.
Because here's the thing, I think. For a team that has this kind of season they did, to go up against a team like Columbus, who they are still good, but again, this is the last team to have made it into the playoffs in the Eastern Conference, I think they got a little too comfortable because they had a 3-0 lead after the first period. So I think they're coming in, home ice advantage, President's Trophy winners, they're up 3-0. I think they just got lulled into a little bit of false sense of security because Columbus came back and got one in the second period and then just went off in the third period and took the lead 4-3 and won it 4-3. But again, like you said, I think five games, this series goes five games. I wouldn't be surprised if Tampa rings off four wins in a row. So that probably was the biggest surprise of the first round. In the first games of the first round for me was Columbus. But then again, Columbus gave Washington a lot of trouble too in last year's first round.
It's true.
I think that series had to go six or seven games, and then Washington went on to win the cup. So you never know. Maybe Columbus is just the rite of passage for any
champion. I was going to say, maybe they're just like a one-and-done kind of team. They make it, they get that one win, and then whoever faced them is going to be the winner. Ooh. Interesting prop.
And
right
speaking of the winner that they will face, Toronto and Boston played game one. Toronto took game one 4-1 over the Bruins. And I picked Toronto to win. I think it's still going to take them seven games to do it. But I think overall, because these guys have met a fair amount recently in the playoffs, and I feel like Boston usually gets the upper hand, I don't feel like it's going to be that way this year.
Yeah, it was hard for me to pick this, being, you know, I like all my Canadian teams. but I did take the Boston in seven. I had that feeling, you know, that that was a hard one to pick. I kind of like hit my head. I hung out with a lot of Canadian guys and stuff for the past 2 weeks, so I got a lot of that, you know, hockey knowledge that I've been kind of missing out on, you know, being gone from here. So that was pretty nice. But they were saying Toronto in seven, and I kind of was just like, you know, Boston's still there though, so yeah. I'm going to take Boston in seven.
I think that was one of the toughest series for me to choose between in the first round was Toronto and Boston. Then Washington, Carolina, the defending cup champions, won the first game 4-2. I think Washington wins this in six games. I think Carolina's going to they're going to hold home ice in games 3 and 4. But then I just think 5 and 6 go to Washington, as well as game 2 will also go to the Capitals. So I see that series playing out Caps in 6.
Okay.
And then Islanders, Penguins, a series that I'm really excited about because of just who the Penguins are and the season that the Islanders have had. I love the fact that Barry Trotz gets Ovechkin to the promised land, gets the Capitals to the Cup. He just gets hacked off for the Washington Capitals coaching squad after he brings them to the Cup and is like, all right, you don't want me here anymore? I'm going to go to the New York Islanders, who's a team in your division, and I'm going to take them to the playoffs. Not only did he do that, but then he coached them to a 4-3 overtime win over Pittsburgh in Game 1. And again, I think this is a 7-game series, but I picked the Islanders to do it. I think they will.
I took Pittsburgh. I couldn't trust the Islanders. Yeah. I think it is going to go in 7. I think it's going to be it's probably going to be overtime in 4 of the 7
games.
It's
going to be a close series.
But Pittsburgh, with the experience and stuff, was going to come out on top on that one.
And here was a little bit of a surprise to me, not as much as gosh dang, I'm running all these teams through my head now and I can't remember anything.
Brain fart right here.
I know, seriously, not as much as Columbus over Tampa Bay. My goodness. But Dallas beating Nashville 3-2 in Nashville for Game 1 was a little surprising to me. I'm not going to be too surprised if Dallas goes on to win this series because they had a very strong end of the season to get that wild card spot. But did not expect them to come out and punch Nashville in the mouth 3-2 in Game 1. I still think Nashville's going to win. I picked them in 6. Little nervous about that now, but I still think they'll be able to pull it off.
I picked Nashville in 7, so hopefully it's Nashville in 1 of the 2.
And then you heard there during the interview with Ian that he thinks the Blues are the upset team to watch in this first round, and they proved that with a 2-1 win over Winnipeg. And this one was a tougher series for me to call. I went with Winnipeg. Kind of just out of my gut was telling me just to go with them because Winnipeg's been limping into the postseason. They have not had a great ending to the season. And on the other hand, St. Louis has, because not only have they had to try and keep up with Winnipeg and Nashville at the top of the division, but they had to hold off charges from teams like Dallas in the Central coming after them in the wild card race. So looking back on it now, I kind of wish I had gone with St. Louis. But I picked Winnipeg, so I will stand by the Jets. I think it's going to go 7. I think it's going to have to go 7.
Yeah, I was going to pick Winnipeg until the Canadians were like, no. Hard no. Don't do that. And I was just like, well, why not? They're a Canadian team. Why wouldn't we go for our Canadian teams? Who cares if they win or lose? And they're like, they're not going to win. Just don't do it. They basically were kind of like around like the Leafs are jinxed or like cursed, you know, kind of thing, yeah. You know? And I was like, I'm going to take your word. I'll go with St. Louis. We'll say 7 just to be safe, but all right.
And now let's talk about some of these specific matchups because Calgary and Colorado. Calgary, I think, is going to be, I mean, take nothing away from Colorado. They're a good team. I think Calgary gets it done in 5 or 6, to be honest, just because of the way they play this season. They're a very aggressive team, especially on home ice. You saw that in the 4-0 win over Colorado. I think the Avs will get one game maybe at home, but I think Calgary takes it in 5.
I agree.
And that brings us to the final first-round matchup, San Jose and Las Vegas. And a good showing from the Sharks in the first game, winning 5-2.
How much did you scream during this game? Like in excitement, clearly.
Yes. Well, there was a lot of emotions going around because they got off to a good start. Vegas was, it looked like they were going to be able to claw and scrap their way back in. But then San Jose added the 4th goal and added the 5th goal. I was like, okay, they got game 1 in the bag. I'll breathe easy. But I think this is going to be a 7-game series. I think San Jose wins it, though.
I took San Jose. It's really hard for me to go for the Knights. Everyone's a Knights fan, and I'm just kind of like, they're Vegas, I guess. I guess I have to root for them. But I took San Jose. I think San Jose is one of the top teams definitely look through this entire playoff course. That's who I'm taking to go all the way up to the Cup in general. No, I don't know if they'll win, but I know they'll make it. At least I think they'll make it.
Should be really fun. Game 2's happening today. Vegas and San Jose at 7:30. Columbus and Tampa Bay at 4 o'clock. Pittsburgh and the New York Islanders at 4:30. And then St. Louis and Winnipeg at 6:30. And then just taking a quick look at the NBA. It started tomorrow. The Golden State Warriors taking on the Clippers. And then Houston taking on Utah. I feel like they are both going to be able to get to the second round. That'll be an extremely interesting second-round matchup between Golden State and Houston to see that one of those teams is going to have to get eliminated. And then Denver, I think, handled San Antonio. I don't know how Portland OKC is going to go. I really don't. I think it's an interesting matchup with the guard play involved, with Damian Lillard leading his squad, Russell Westbrook, who just averaged a triple-double for the 3rd season in a row, which is mental along all levels. But I could see OKC possibly pulling off an upset over Portland. And then the Eastern Conference, you heard Ian say it. I completely agree with him. It is wide freaking open right now. Milwaukee, Boston, Toronto, and Philadelphia, obviously the top four teams. Those are the front runners. But I wouldn't be surprised if Indiana could give Boston a run. They were supposed to just fall off with the Oladipo injury, and they did not. They held their playoff spot. And you never know what Brooklyn could muster up against Philly, but I don't think Orlando or Detroit's really going to have a first-round contest. But I think the East is going to be the most fun it's been in about a decade. So buckle up for the Eastern Conference playoffs in the NBA. But we'll all get to see how it plays out. Again, that gets started tomorrow. I believe four games on the docket tomorrow. Brooklyn, Philadelphia, Orlando, Toronto, the Clippers and Golden State, and San Antonio and Denver all get started that on ESPN and ABC. When we come back, we'll talk about Formula One as they get set for their 1,000th Grand Prix. And we'll talk about WrestleMania 35, which is in the books, and what that offered. That's coming up on the Spencer Wilson Show here on ESPN Radio, 94.5 FM. Formula One is in Shanghai, China, as they get ready for round three of the 2019 season, but this will be their 1,000th Grand Prix race. Formula One started back in 1950. That was the first ever season. I believe it was just eight races on the schedule. And of course, it's evolved and changed over time. It's now a 21-race season. They go all over Europe, Asia, the Middle East, the Americas. They go to Australia. I mean, it is truly a international competition. And some things to look at going into this. Can Ferrari stay reliable? Charles Leclerc should have had his first win in Bahrain 2 weeks ago, and the car gave out, had an electrical problem. So with that, plus their lack of speed in Australia, can Ferrari just stay reliable enough to keep up with Mercedes? We'll find that out. And will Pierre Gasly finally give Red Bull a strong weekend? So far, he hasn't. It's still been all Max Verstappen. He's been in the top five in the practice sheets. So if Red Bull really wants to try and contend with Ferrari and Mercedes, Pierre Gasly's going to have to turn it around eventually. And then how will the Mercedes play with each other? How will Bottas and Hamilton handle it? They've both been at the top of practice sheets so far in Shanghai, and we've seen what happens when Mercedes teammates tangle before involving Lewis Hamilton with all those Rosberg battles. So it'll be interesting to see how they handle themselves going into Shanghai, China, and the Chinese Grand Prix. Saturday night, local time, I believe. Lights go out 11:10 p.m. Saturday night here, local time, if you want to watch it live. Or if you're like me, you'll just wake up Sunday morning and turn on the replay. But either way, should be a lot of fun. And then WrestleMania 35 took place last Sunday. It is in the books. The first ever WrestleMania with a women's main event, and we'll get to that. But let's talk about the one thing that really stood out to me on the pre-show, and that was the Raw Tag Team Championships changing hands. Kurt Hawkins and Zack Ryder defeated the Revival to win the Raw Championships. Two men that really have not had a whole lot of stuff going on. I think there was the joke around Kurt Hawkins was that he had this incredibly long losing streak. He lost for like 2 years in a row before a win. And I think something about Zack Ryder having his name spelled wrong on all the animations and everything where they put your... So there was a running joke around the fact these guys literally couldn't get anything done, and they go out on the WrestleMania pre-show and win the Raw tag titles. It might not have been the smartest move because these guys don't have a lot of traction with fans as a tag team, but individually, crowds love them. There was a huge pop when they won the tag team championships. This is on the pre-show too, so to get that kind of a pop on a pre-show is awesome. So hats off to them for being able... just to get a moment like that, get a WrestleMania moment. And then a couple things that stood out from the main card. The Universal Championship kicked it off. Brock Lesnar and Seth Rollins opened up the main card, which I don't think is something a lot of people saw coming. The story that at least that I heard coming out of it was that since Lesnar knew he wasn't going to be in the main event, he just didn't want to wait around. So let's just get us out.
He's like, I got a couch to sit on, man.
Exactly. I know I'm not going to keep this belt. Let's just get this thing over with. but that was something else that came out of this. Championship winners. That always creates a lot of controversy around WrestleMania results. And people that the fans wanted to see win, won. Seth Rollins beat Brock Lesnar. That gives the Universal Championship a full-time champion, and that's what people have been dying for. So they get that. Kofi Kingston pulled off a great upset in WrestleMania moment, beating Daniel Bryan for the WWE Championship. A storyline that really got fans excited, But I didn't think he was actually going to get the win. I thought it was going to be false finish after false finish, get your hopes up, and Daniel Bryan was going to pull it off somehow. But they went through with it. They gave Kofi Kingston the WWE Championship, which was fantastic. He brought his little son into the ring. They had a big celebration. They had championship shirts made, and his son was throwing that into the crowd. Great, great moment there. And then, of course, the main event. Becky Lynch, Ronda Rousey, Charlotte Flair, the first ever women's main event at WrestleMania. And it was a good match. It was a solid match. The ending, though, got a little wonky, and that's what's going to be the talk of the town. Because Becky Lynch won, and based on the storyline they were telling, that makes sense for her to win because she was the only one entering without a championship into this match, and she was the one that was fighting the odds. So it makes sense. But the way it ended, Ronda went for her main finisher, and Becky rolled her up. The ref counted one, and then both of Ronda's shoulders clearly come off the mat. Clear as day. Like, it's not just like they pop up for a little bit and then get put down. They lift off a good 1 or 2 feet before getting put down on the mat, and the ref doesn't start over. He just counts 2, 3, and the match ends. Kind of caught the crowd off guard, and there are some rumors going around that maybe WWE pulled a fast one over on Ronda. I don't know. But it was kind of a wonky end, which is a bummer because it was a good match. It was an entertaining match. And it just kind of sucks to see the first ever women's main event end that way. But either way, I thought it was a fun show. I thought it was better than some WrestleManias in the past couple years. The pacing was nice. So overall, 2 thumbs up for me on the show. But thank you for tuning in. Have a good weekend. Be safe out there and support the Aces. Peace!